Carr from the Onondaga Pathways to Careers program, and she will be talking about the family engagement survey that they have been putting out in the field that I believe you previously mentioned. Okay, we had an echo and it did go away. I think it helps when folks put their phones on mute if they're not talking so that we don't have too many microphones operating. We'll also have Bobby Latimer from OPC, and she'll help us understand how you know, a mapping or identification of community resources initiative was implemented, and William Myhill, the project director, as always. And Michael and I will be available to facilitate the conversation. We have others joining us. We have Pellissippi joining us. I don't know if today we have New York Community Colleges joining us based on the roll call so far, but hopefully to join. Georgia VR also not yet present, but hopefully to join.
This is Jeff Allen from Georgia VR. I'm on the call.
Oh, Jeff. Sorry, I didn't recognize. I see you now listed there. That's wonderful. So we do have Georgia represented. I don't think we have Virginia yet, but hopefully Virginia soon. I know Kentucky, Helga, was planning on joining us by phone, and I sent her the information just briefly, so she may yet be joining us.
Yep, and I'm here. Thank you.
Oh, hi, Helga. We have DEI team. I know, Miranda, you said you were here with your team, and perhaps some of your projects in the past. I know Utah has joined. And then we also have Department of Labor on the call. I know Sheldon joined us, and maybe others are in the process of joining. Okay, so just again a recap of very specifically the agenda and the millions of slides that I have listed. What I've tried to do here is really just go back to several past sessions where we had addressed strategies that I thought related to our topic as we've danced in and around pieces of the theme. So I wanted to sort of put them all back together again. The last meeting we held, we discussed a lot of the significant barriers and challenges that the youth coming into our program can bring with them, and how these can really impact their progress through the pathway, through educational pieces, or even if they're out there in the workforce and we're trying to support them. And we presented some really, I think, engaging case examples from the OPC program, and I know folks were very interested by that, and a lot of what they heard resonated with them. I wanted to return to this because we have some newer strategies and updates on strategies we've discussed before from OPC, and I wanted to bring everything together and say that we ended on that discussion. We had to end right at the end. We were carrying on. The conversation was so engaging, but we were talking about challenges, and I wanted to bring us back to strategies. So we're just going to go through our journey, but very briefly. We will fly through these slides, and I do apologize for the quickness that we'll go through them, but again, we've presented them before and everything is archived on the website. We will briefly, again, go through some of the resources and strategies that we've previously shared that bear upon this, and then discuss again the updated work. Having then discussed, I think, a lot of these sort of early on getting the youth engaged with our career pathways process issues like retention, recruitment, you know, life-related challenges and all of these strategies, what I'd like to propose, and we can discuss at the end, is that in our future sessions, we start moving on to some of the next phase issues that we can look at as folks continue to move down that career pathway. How can we start preparing them for those pathways, career exploration-wise, work-based learning opportunities that they can have, such as job shadowing, internships, service learning, and I'd love to hear from our group what other strategies you're using. So that's our plan for of action for today. Does anybody have any thoughts or questions before we move on?
Mira, could you send out the PowerPoint to those of us who are calling in on the phone and not able to access the platform?
Absolutely. I believe Celestia is loading them onto the website, and Celestia, if you wouldn't mind, could you send them as an attachment through our listserv so that they get to everybody?
Thank you.
Okay, moving through these. Am I going backwards? Sorry about that. Okay. So again, as you know, we've talked a lot around family engagement, and previously we've provided background and recommendations, and we have some of the speakers that have presented this information with us today as well. We have the Pathways to Careers Toolkit. This is not a toolkit that's specific to pathway programs that are for people with disabilities, but rather just generally pathways to careers. And it talks about case management, and these are one of the strategies that we have discussed can really help when it comes to all of the various challenges that students may be bringing in, and how we can address that. Case management can really be a way of engaging with them through the recruitment process, ensuring retention, helping them get through the aspects of the programs that we're putting together, but also helping with life skill or life issues, any academic or personal counseling that they may need. And again, we'll present some newer strategies related to that. Certainly, when it comes to Pellissippi and OCC, the programs are centered around community colleges, so financial aid guidance can be very useful, and other supportive services that we may connect in. We also previously presented on the guideposts from Mindy's group, IEL, and they have a section of the guideposts that does focus around family involvement. And as we've talked about, getting the families engaged with their youth can be a really good strategy to ensuring that they persevere and make it through the programs and make it down the pathways. So they talk about the fact that youth need their parents, their families, and just other caring adults or supports that help remind them they have high expectations for them. They believe in the young person's strengths and that they can achieve independence and self-sufficiency, help move them towards adulthood, help connect them to other community resources, help them with transition planning and other networks that may be useful to them. They need also people who will understand their disability and how it affects them, how it affects what access they may need to information about rights and responsibilities under disability-related legislation, for example, have access and knowledge about programs and services, and individualized planning tools and how they can help them. Often, again, having families or just support networks that can help them with all of these things is very useful. So getting them involved is a strategy to look at, and OPC will be discussing that. We also have Rebecca Salon, who presented previously in our meeting about individuals with significant disabilities and an option for getting involved in planning using a tool called Charting the Life Course and the Trajectory to really think about someone's vision for their life and their employment-related goals and how they can move themselves towards that goal by engaging them and their family and anyone that's in their support network. And she presented some tools which are available on our website. This is a worksheet, for example, a life trajectory worksheet where someone's thinking big picture about what it is that they want for themselves, and they can connect that in with the career pathway program then. Here's the integrated support star, thinking about supports and services that they can bring to bear towards their employment-related goals. And here's another worksheet that really just breaks it down into its constitutional or elemental pieces. And again, all of these, Rebecca really talked us through in her last meeting. That meeting is archived, and the resources are also archived on our website. OPC has also presented, as I mentioned, about the barriers to success that their students are facing, but their activities related to that, which include family engagement and outreach, but also some other strategies. Really what they're finding is there's a significant intersection between various issues and disability, including poverty, homelessness, hunger, and that these things can be combined with other inequalities, such as gender, race, and ethnicity. This is a pervasive issue in our community where the program is based in Syracuse and Onondaga County, where poverty and poverty and its intersection with race and ethnicity in particular are very pervasive. What they're finding as examples of student issues that commonly are encountered, just access to basic needs. And this is where they presented several, I think, very moving real-life examples that helped us understand what's happening on the ground. Students who don't have clothing, housing, food, heat, or hot water, they need mental health care or other types of health care, and they don't necessarily have access to it. Again, a pervasive issue in our community is a lack of access to these resources and very long waiting lists. They may have problems at home. They may not have the soft skills or have learned how to communicate effectively with their professors, particularly around these issues that are so personal. They need help with classes. They need help with relationship issues. They need help understanding what the transition from high school to college looks like and how they need to move to independence and handling some things that previously they had significant supports around. And always, I think we see in this field, everywhere, transportation issues is always a problem. Commonly what they do is they have a lot of referrals they're making into the community. They're making referrals to psychiatric services, to the VR program here, to food pantry, to others to help them find aid. Centro is transportation, the learning center on campus. So they have a system in place to make referrals. Whether or not these referrals can always be picked up immediately, you know, as we mentioned, psychiatric services, there's long waiting lists. So they don't always immediately get the help they need, even if you do make the appropriate referral. But there's a good system in place at OCC, and we previously presented on this with respect to retention as well. They have a WeCare system. There's an online reporting form that absolutely any member of OCC can access if they have a concern about a student. And what happens is that a case collaboration committee then reviews the case and referrals are made and people can work directly with the student to try and support them and prevent the challenges from growing and the challenges from becoming a retention issue where the student then can no longer even stay with OCC. This is a snapshot on this slide about what that might look like. And they, of course, get to have individual meetings in one quarter, just for one quarter's data, for example, in our program. The educational coordinator, Megan, who I don't think is with us today, had 110 student, oh, hey, Megan, great.
Hi.
Had 110 student advisement meetings. That's a lot. And this was just the first time this information has been tracked. Over time, we may see trends where there is growth in this. And the meetings, as you can see, for so many meetings, each of them taking from 30 minutes to an hour or even longer, depending on the issue that the student is having. And a lot of times, you're outlining the resources and how to handle challenges. And again, this challenge is relating to issues that we've talked about. But what you can imagine is this means you're not spending a lot of time talking about the student, their educational pathway, their goals, and their career pathways. You're spending a lot of time talking about barriers that are interfering from even being able to get to those next line discussions. So resources and strategies. As one example, OPC was able to identify in the community locally and a neighboring county where comprehensive brochures and maps were being put together of resources. And this is where I'd like to turn to Bobby and William, who can talk about this. Bobby and William, we have loaded up the Cayuga County version first, because I know that that's what you were presented with as you know, one example. And then the next slides will go into the Onondaga County, that's where your program is located, versions. But if you wouldn't mind, I'd love if you could talk our group through how you developed this and what use it is for you.
This is William. I guess I'll take the lead. So initially, going back a bit over a year ago, in working within the broader Central New York community, we were meeting with many different school districts and many different services, including the Vocational Rehabilitation Agency and numerous disability service programs. And we found that across all of us, there were many different activities going on providing support regarding transition for young people with disabilities while they're still in secondary school, transitioning into college, into the workplace,
and other types of training programs. And we also similarly realized that to some extent we had the potential to begin stepping on each other's toes, because we were often collaborating with many of the same entities and didn't necessarily know that. So it was a vision of our colleague Lisa Koji at Arise, one of our partners here in Syracuse, to bring forward a kind of document that had previously existed that did a nice job of presenting a picture of all the different types of transition supports available in the community, but it was rather out of date. And so as a team, we decided we could update that. It would be a great benefit to all of us in our various work, in our collaborative work, and specifically for our program, it would be an opportunity for us to put ourselves on that map and to make sure people in the community were aware of what the Onondaga Pathways to Careers program had to offer in this respect. That's the big background. That's how our brand new Onondaga map came together and all of its various services that are listed and cross-reference. Bobby perhaps can speak more directly to the development of the more recent Cayuga County version, or perhaps can talk a bit more about the process of sort of the actual, the more specifics of putting together these two documents.
So I basically chatted with Alyssa and Mike and Aaron at Arise. They sent me the Excel spreadsheet that they've been using to identify different agencies and the services they provide. And I put it into a publisher file. And we decided on a size. We actually took some physical samples down to the Arise office, and we met around a table and decided what size poster it would fit best on, and still have a big enough font to be readable. And we kind of looked at a few different folding options. And in the process of doing that, we decided we needed to run the header across halfway down the page, things like that. We went over those sorts of details. And then I just I picked a pretty simple background. I didn't want it to be too busy. And I put together a prototype that I actually printed out in several pieces on the printer here, taped it all together, and went down there to show them how it would look size-wise. That's pretty much how it went together. I pretty much cut and paste everything from their Excel spreadsheet. The only things I did, I picked the background, I put colors in the alternate rows going down the chart, and then I created a check mark that would stand out across the rows under each of the different services.
And Bobby, you mentioned that you had several agencies vet the list and vet the information.
Yes. That was something that was coordinated at Arise. They worked with Access VR, us, the Mid-State RSD, EASD, and EFR.
And what are those last two groups? For everyone on the call, they're a national audience, and so they're not as familiar with our local agencies. Arise is one of our local larger independent living centers. And then you mentioned the VR program, and OCC was involved in this effort. And those last two, would you mind letting everybody know?
Mid-State Regional Special Education Technical Assistant Support Center. I believe that's what that stands for, right, William? Does that sound right? The RSETASP. And then the last one is Exceptional Family Resources, EFR.
And then we also had staff from, if you didn't mention this, BOCES, which is the Board of Cooperative Educational Services, our local board, which covers Onondaga, Cayuga, and Madison counties. We had Colleen from their office working with us on this.
So they made sure that you weren't missing any local agencies of relevance, and I'm assuming that the areas of service that they provide in this chart, for example, where you've checked off all the relevant pieces, that those were accurate and correct. You didn't? Did you send this for review and feedback to every single agency that was listed, or did you just have this core group verify the accuracy?
Alyssa described in her email reply to me this week that they called different agencies and also checked websites. They basically did their best to vet all of the information. The guide itself, I don't believe that was circulated, but the Excel spreadsheet, which is basically where all of the information was before I just put it on a poster, that was vetted.
Great. Okay, thank you. Do others have any questions about this? Folks from Nebraska or Kentucky or Tennessee, do you have something similar in your communities, a comprehensive resource guide? Has it been useful?
In Kentucky, we do have that, and our CACT network, our Kentucky Assistive Technology, puts a really good one out, and we distribute that among our rehab counselors.
Mm-hmm.
This is Janet from Nebraska. And when it comes to resource guides and things, I mean, we have, you know, we're working with the adult population with our grant rather than to transition from school to work. So I can't speak for sure what resource guides are available from the transitions program. We have put together resources from Health and Human Services and after the transitions guide that we use. So there are some resources out there, but I can't speak to all of them.
Great. And when you say your population is more of an adult population, what's your age range?
Well, for the particular, for Nebraska VR, of course, it transitions, you know, up to retirement. But
right.
For our particular Career Pathways Advancement Project grant, we are calling clients who have been closed successfully during the years of 13, 14, and 15 who have either come out of transition or are adult clients, but now they're considered, you know, they're all probably 20, 21, you know, and have been out of school for a couple of years. And so we're working with that that population to upskill them and advance them in their current jobs in the career path, in those career pathways.
Right.
So our grant's a little different than the other three is that we're not starting with them in high school. We've already worked with the clients, and now we're trying to upskill them within the career pathway.
Right, right. A very innovative approach.
Yeah.
This is Pellissippi. For our program, we created a community resource guide. We looked through all the resources, housing, medical, food, you know, healthcare, mm-hmm. and put that together and gave it to our students and then to the departments throughout the school. And then we also created a what we call SOAR, which is sharing our area resources fair that we've done 6 times now. Mm-hmm. that we invite all the community resources to come into our big college center and to all our different site campuses and be able to talk to students. And then we also give them the resources there, our book as well, so that we're all on the same page. So.
Oh, that's great to call them onto campus. I like that. Okay. I'll move the slides along. You can see that we had to upload the brochure into several slides. It's very comprehensive. The next strategy that we wanted to update you on from OPC involves a community care hub case manager. So we have Elizabeth Gannon on the call, and she is overseeing this department and this initiative. But again, this relates back to the Career Pathways Toolkit background suggestion that we had brought previously to the table, and it's that idea of having a case manager, having potentially a social worker. So when students meet with Megan at OPC, who is our educational coordinator, or Jay, who is our employment coordinator, they can talk about career pathway relevant issues and really hone in on those things and have a separate resource where they can go and talk about some of the other challenges that they may be having. So if Elizabeth, if you wouldn't mind just letting us know what the vision is for this position, that would be wonderful.
Sure. And actually, I can do the position as well as the community care hub itself. OCC gained a community schools grant to fund what is now our developing and growing community care hub here on campus. And the vision for it is that it will operate to serve the non-academic needs of our students that are currently impeding their ability to focus on education and be successful. And those are primarily those issues that are related to living in a state of poverty. So it's everything from housing and food insecurity to emergency funding to assistance with tax preparation, legal services, the ability to help our students in collaboration with our counseling department get an assessment and a diagnosis of a mental health concern so that treatment can be facilitated for them, getting them access to health insurance, whether it's through Medicaid or it's through the Department of Health and their health navigators. That's a fairly good sampling of the things that we are currently and or futuristically going to be providing for our students. The college has also invested in, it's called Single Stop USA. I would highly recommend taking a look at their website, which is just singlestopusa.org. And they are a nonprofit entity that has really worked to help do what I've been hearing throughout the call, which is really to consolidate all of our ability to help students access resources and services specific to the needs that they have. So Single Stop is basically a benefit screener, and our case manager will be the person who will meet with our students and go through the questionnaire of this benefit screener, which really asks questions about what their current condition is, whether it's what's going on with them financially, what is their housing situation, are they a parent, do they have children, do they have dependents, a number of those types of questions. And all the while, the software itself is helping to identify those benefits that this particular person might be eligible for based on the answers that they are providing. So we worked with Single Stop to upload all of the community resources, and they have a very streamlined process for doing that. It's based on zip codes, so there are a number of different zip codes in Onondaga County, so all of those have been entered, and then there are community services and governmental services that are automatically pulled into the system. So by the time the case manager finishes working through that questionnaire with the student, at the end of that, they will now be able to say to them, it looks like you might be eligible for, let's say it's a HEAP, which is the application that students, that anybody can prepare in order to get help with heat and electricity in their home. They might be able to say, it looks like you're eligible for SNAP, for food stamps. Let's get that process up and running and get the application completed. It might say that you, are eligible for Medicaid, et cetera. The other side of the Community Care Hub dynamic is that we have space here in our new location where we can actually have community service partners here on campus and have a presence here so that our students, I know someone mentioned it earlier in terms of transportation is always an issue, so that our students don't have to actually manage getting from the campus to in the community or to the Department of Social Services, that those folks are actually here on campus on a regular basis, on a rotational schedule. They have office space here in our area, and students can know when they're going to be here and where to find them. So all of this is in an effort to really streamline our students, both their knowledge of what's available to them in the community, as well as their ability to access and receive those resources. I think that's probably my best explanation.
Can I interrupt?
Can I leave anything out?
I was just curious, did you say that was singlestopusa.org, or what was that website?
Yes, singlestop.usa.org.
Singlestop.usa.org, okay.
Correct. And one of their most recent report that was an independent study by RAND Corporation, you can get that full report, but basically they do all of the data collection and reports management, and that's the other silver lining of this particular software is that now you have reports related to any need that you might have, whether it's for grant purposes or it's for institutional purposes or it's for capacity building purposes. You can run reports on the needs of your students, the demographics of your students. You're able to see how many students' needs were identified and consequently were met, how they were met, through what services, the services your students are using the most, et cetera. And that report demonstrates that basically about 12% of single-stop users were more likely to persist in their next year at college. All of the findings really do suggest that the one-stop shop, so to speak, such as this community care hub model, is really best wraparound service model for students that are low income. I'm trying to see, key findings. So that report is available. Go right ahead.
Oh, so I was just going to say, I believe in a prior presentation, I should have put that slide in here and we'll amend this presentation. We did have the single stop slide so that you could see it, and I'll make sure that this is on our website in a prominent location, the website, as well as I will find this RAND report and make sure that that's available too. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And they're really quite phenomenal in that when you do become a single-stop partner, they have an entire team that walks you through getting the software all set up for your particular area. They do all of the training. They do not just training on the software, but they do training on responses to a particular need, for example, for food insecurity. We also have a food pantry here in the Community Care Hub for our students here on campus, and that we are just about to become an official member of the Central New York Food Bank, so we're able to do that here on campus as well.
That's great. Thank you. In case useful, we just posted on the slides, you know, all of the skills and the knowledge and the abilities that you're looking for in this kind of a person to really work with everyone. But thank you for that really comprehensive and contextual.
Absolutely.
Overview.
And the wonderful thing is, sure. And William was actually, he was on our search committee for our case manager. So he has been an incredible resource for us to make sure that we're looking for the skills and abilities that are consistent with what our students need.
Excellent. Any other thoughts from our group? Any other similar initiatives with the other programs that might be also useful to consider as alternatives to this model or to single staff in particular?
This is Rita. I've been on the call, but I'm traveling, so it's a little hard to participate. But I just want to thank you for that last resource. It sounds very exciting, so we'll definitely be sure to check it out in Georgia.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us, Rita. So another member from Georgia. Wonderful. And next, I wanted to keep moving forward through, again, as I mentioned, we've talked about some of these things before, but we have some updated information. So we have talked about the idea of family engagement. And certainly I've already presented some of the background information related to that we see, you know, at a national level it's recognized as a best practice, and there's some tools like charting the life course that help you think through how you can do that. We also have programs. OCC's program is doing work related to family engagement. Georgia's program is doing work related to family engagement. And indeed, as we mentioned, has a partner in the POSIS Family Foundation that really, it's put a nice comprehensive approach to thinking through those things. Prior OPC strategies that we have mentioned is, of course, connecting to local family advocacy organizations, the Special Education Parent-Teacher Associations. They have a program that we've talked about previously, their scholars program, and that gets students engaged when their families are still working with them as well. They have a parent family newsletter, and their Office of Accessibility Resources did a family survey of OPC students. Here's that family survey. You can see the questions that are listed, and I believe we should have Nancy or Megan, perhaps you were going to present on this survey, as well as just, I know you have very preliminary findings from it so far.
Thanks, Mira. Meg and I are both here. What we've determined from this initial mailing, which we did in the fall semester for new OPC students, is we're going to expand it in do the questionnaire each semester. We didn't get enough of a response. We only got 11 responses, but still we could identify some initial trends even from that. If you look down to the second or third question, is your son or daughter living at home or on campus? Does your college student drive? If commuting, how do they travel to campus? That's rather important, not only for their initial semester here, but for the next steps that OPC wants to get them involved with in terms of career planning, job shadowing, internships. So from that, there were only 2 students identified as currently able to completely, independently transport themselves. That's key knowledge, and this beginning of March, a new position will be joining OPC of a job coach. So I intend to give this summarized information to him as well when he comes on, because obviously 4 job shadowing internships, if only 2 students are able to independently transport, that's going to have to be addressed right away in terms of next steps and how a student can become engaged in these various opportunities that OPC is going to provide them. So what we did also notice, another trend, was that since this was the first semester of their college experience, a lot of the parents referenced the special education services that they had had, and I think were somewhat still in the transition themselves from the language that they used and encountering the differences between high school and college. So some services were provided in high school, such as private transportation that I just referenced, that the family would no longer have access to. So that's a big impact upon the parents as well if they're transporting their son and daughter and having to adjust to that in their own schedule, that kind of thing. So we're proud that March 13th, our college is hosting the Central New York Transition Fair that rotates to various sites every year, and this year it's our turn. So that will be several hundred parents, educators, and high school students from 9th to 12th grade that will be coming to OCC for a day and encountering a whole variety of, there'll be a student panel, student success stories. There's 4 panels on attending college. Megan and I are moderating 2 of those panels here. So we're going to start raising these issues at our panels to sort of maybe prompt families at that point in time to be thinking about this a little more. Oh, is there a way my son or daughter could experience taking a bus right now, even on the weekend to the mall, if they have their own bus transportation during the week? What steps in 9th to 12th grade could students take to help them become a little bit more independent along some of these continuums? Elizabeth had already identified the Community Care Hub. We had a big division-wide meeting this very morning, and we talked about all the various supports we have here, like the food pantry. Some of our student scholarships have become more enhanced and available. We're in the process of workforce alignment, consideration for some more certificate programs. So getting this information out there early, helping students and families navigate. Megan is really skilled at aligning student needs and identifying along all the hubs and the questionnaires and resource manuals that you saw with Bobby, how to help a student identify a pathway, even given some of their barriers. Megan, do you want to add anything at this point?
I don't think that I need to add any more to that, but I will say that, you know, we are hoping to, as Nancy said, expand the questionnaire and hopefully send it out again now that we have had students in college for a bit longer to sort of get a different perspective from the family and the parents.
There's 2 other opportunities that were just identified and starting to work on. We took an OPC student this semester who's in his final semester here, and he is our intern right here in our office in our adaptive technology lab. And his skill set is branding He just did a nice PowerPoint on the use of a type of adaptive technology for our students. He's going to present at a conference that we're hosting here as well in March, a different conference that we're hosting. So we see that when given these leadership opportunities, students are really able to step up to it. It really enhances their self-esteem. So we're exploring further broadening those and expanding the types that are available. And then I just learned yesterday, I haven't even had the opportunity to discuss this with any of the other staff, that a new pilot is beginning here next year where 11th graders will be taking college classes on our campus. We already have a fairly robust program for 12th graders. This will be 11th graders. So we are going to be involved in that transition. That will give us an opportunity, I think, as well to work some of these issues ahead of it. For example, transportation will probably be provided by the high school at that point, but that gives us entree to say, okay, when you finish high school, how could you plan to transport yourself to OCC to keep going? But it also builds familiarity. The staff will be involved and know these students. There'll be many, many benefits, I think, to beginning this program. They will be using college accommodations, not the special education accommodations that they have in high school. So that'll give us another opportunity for earlier work on transition issues and more links back to the high school and conversations about our 11th graders that will be joining us. So that's a little bit about what's currently going on this Monday. Women's History Month begins here, and along the topic that you showed an earlier slide on, intersectionality, people have become interested in this topic. So William invited a colleague of his, Professor Beth Ferry from SU, is giving a presentation on intersectionality just this Monday, the 27th, as the kickoff of our Women's History Month activities. So we're trying to weave these various topics into our own broader campus conversations.
Great. Any other programs reaching out to family members and also seeing similar patterns in terms of the issues that are presenting? Not yet. Rita, I know that you're in travel status, so you may not be able to keep talking on the phone, especially if you're in a car, but I know that Georgia, for example, has an approach. You're working with parent to parent, and we've presented these approaches before. I'm wondering, have you started to receive any feedback from the field, from how families are feeling about the work that's being done?
I think, Mira, this I appreciate you asking. I think it's a little too soon for us to be able to report on results. Right now, we have 4 parent transition partners that have been hired for our participating districts for the E3 grant. And so they're working on different activities, transition fairs, et cetera, within each district. And they'll also, what they'll be doing is supporting VR staff in reaching out to potentially out-of-school youth, actually to the parents of out-of-school youth. So we're trying some new things, and quite honestly, each district, we're customizing it based upon the needs of the district. We have a parent engagement plan, a formal plan that our career pathway specialists, they actually sit down with and meet with the special education director, with the parent transition partner, and they go over some of the suggested activities for the year and decide as a group what those could look like.
Right.
Okay, well, that's a good point. It is definitely a little bit early to understand how everything is going to be working across the board, but we'll look forward to that in a future meeting. And certainly there's some momentum since the last time we raised this. I think we presented to the group your plan and the idea of hiring these transition partners so that four are already out there and beginning their work. It's great to see that that's moving along smoothly. I know that their activities involve this outreach and one-on-one consultation and support, as well as connecting families. We'll be excited to learn how it's all operating, and it really does fit within other aspects of what I know about Georgia's programs, this, as you mentioned, customized approach. We've been working closely with you through our Southeast ADA Center to develop ADA advocacy modules for your educators and your transition coordinators and others to be able to use with the youth, and it's involved the same customized approach. And I think it's an effortful approach to do things customized, but that you're doing it across the board with so many aspects of your project, recognizing the differences across your districts is a really important one. I think there'll be a lot of interesting information as your program continues to roll out.
Well, thank you, Mira. And I just have to say that the ADA curriculum that you all developed with the Southeast ADA Center has been very well received. So just know that, and it's already being rolled out in one of the school districts. So it was, I think we did a train the trainer on Tuesday, and that Friday one of the school districts went ahead and started rolling out the curriculum.
Wow, that is fantastic.
Mira, this is Miranda Kennedy with the Disability Employment Initiative, and it was great to be able to join today. We've got four of our new DEI projects that were awarded in October are youth projects, and they're, you know, it takes a little while to get them up and running, but I think they're probably on the cusp of being ready to, I'm going to certainly encourage them to join this community of practice. I understand that the invitation is open for that, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's wonderful.
In particular, they'll all be interested in this information. We'll send out the web page that has the archives of the presentations and encourage them to join the next one. But the information from today was great. I know it will be well received. So I'm going to push that out. And I can just even think off the top of my head, our Minnesota DEI 7 project is a youth-focused project. They've got such a wealth of background with career pathways in Minnesota. And their new project lead is fairly young himself, but he's quite a go-getter and very strategic. And he worked on an employment resource guide for successfully preparing students with disabilities for competitive integrated employment that is in its final stages. And I know he'll be interested in seeing these the information from today. We were just talking about intersectionality the other day. He wasn't able to join. But we'll be getting that out, and I just wanted to let you know we'll make an effort to make sure we get some more folks on from our DEI, especially since we do have more and more of our projects are youth projects with that career pathways focus. So I just wanted to chime in with that and let you all know in 2017 we'll try to get some additional fresh blood and other ideas into this forum.
Wonderful. Thank you, Miranda.
And it's been great to hear from everyone already, but I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. That will be so wonderful. We'll really look forward to it. And I'm excited. I think this idea, as you mentioned, that he's put together this employment resource guide, as I mentioned at the top of our call, it'll be nice to start moving into that sort of next phase of discussion, since we're all career pathway programs, to focus on that career employment-related information. So it'll be perfect timing.
Well, and they're all focused as well on workforce employment networks and serving ticket holders, so there could be a lot of other components, but other things that we might explore in terms of, I don't know, is there an outline of upcoming topics, or is that figured out each time?
what we've been doing is taking it session by session, but certainly I think now that we're ready to move into this next phase, that would be a nice approach. Everybody is on the listserv, so certainly what I can do is generate out an email to everyone and list some of these issues, and maybe everyone can chime in as well. Miranda, certainly, if you let me know your DEI folks who are interested, we'll pop them all on the listserv, get a comprehensive sort of list of issues, and maybe start planning our agenda a little more longer range. That would be, I think, a nice way to go forward.
Well, and even being able to prepare and have this on, you know, if they are to present, we certainly need quite a bit of heads up time typically, but we're happy to do that.
No problem. That'd be great. I just put up my slide. Miranda, the next slide is new members welcome. And I see that we're at the end, so I just want to quickly move to the slide. Our next meeting is April 27th. That's, again, a Thursday at noon Eastern time. And, Michael, was that you? Did you want to chime in?
Yes. I just think today's presentations and discussion really were very rich, very deep, covered a lot of ground. I do like, Miranda, your suggestion that we might build out the agenda for the next set of meetings every 2 months. At least we could send out some proposed ideas. I do think your mentioning of the ticket to work, a lot of the individuals are probably or potentially recipients of SSI and or SSDI. How does that fit in with Ticket to Work? I'd love to see us raise the topic of financial literacy, help whether it's youth or some of the projects we're working with a little bit, a group a little bit older, young adults and up, and where does that intersect? And a third area is always an interesting transition is between youth and adult services within the workforce development system, and that including and integrating different collaborative partners outside the American Job Centers, education, different types of community partners as well. I think are some of the topics we can bring on. But we'll also put the question out to all of you so that you can give us ideas, and that's, I think, something we can put out between now and the April 27th next Community of Practice.
Thank you, Michael.
So I think we're over time at this point, so maybe I'll draw it to a close. Thank you, Mira, for facilitating today. Thank you for the folks at Onondaga Community College, the Georgia participants, and all of you from across the country who've come on. I think this is growing in importance, and I think we are adding depth, and Celestia will also send you material about where all of this is being archived if you've missed prior communities of practice. I believe while we're on, we did get the PowerPoints today. Thank you, Celestia. And thank you all for this work. I think this is true pioneering, trailblazing work. And we look forward to having you be with us. February's call will move us next to April 27th at noon Eastern Standard Time. Thanks, everyone, and talk to you soon. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.